Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Howdy, third hour here on the show. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, coming to you from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. So we're going to get back to Mahomes this hour, have a little fun with that. Patty obviously set and making sure there's a little meat on the bone for a nice roster for around him, which obviously is smart. But real quick, Tiki, I was doing some digging on this, right? And there's a lot of rabbit holes, so I'll make sure I don't fall down too many of them. It's 9 amazing facts from the career of Tony Gwynn, right? Because I could not find... I didn't get too deep into the search of which pitcher struck him out the most because I typed it in, this came up, and then I started diving into this. But let me read you one little thing. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we all know how great Greg Maddux was. That goes without saying. But in 35 games, I do know that he faced Greg Maddux the most. But your question was who struck him out the most, right?
Yes, and okay. What that number was.
That I don't have, but he has faced Greg Maddux the most. All right, 15 years together in the NL. So in 35 years against Maddux, Gwynn, as I read, hit a Ty Cobb-like 429. He was 39 for 91 with 8 doubles and a triple, but Maddux never struck Gwynn out ever. In 103 plate appearances, Gwynn put the ball in play 93 times, and he walked 10 times. Wow. He was intentionally walked by Maddux 6 times, the most intentional walks that Gwynn's ever received from any enemy pitcher. Maddux is a Hall of Famer who struck out more than 3,000 batters in his career, but the one batter he faced the most often, San Diego's number 19, never fanned against him. That is just almost incomprehensible. Wow.
Yeah, that's incredible. Just, that's other level good of hand eye, of seeing the ball, knowing
insanity.
How to... It doesn't make any sense.
You can't even explain it.
No, because so nobody does it now. Exactly.
You know? This was interesting as we get back to Mahomes. Did you see how the story was broken about Patrick Mahomes?
No, I didn't.
Okay. You know, there's the great Adam Schefter. You know, he was believed to have put out the first tweet about the news. However... based on some digging, and there was a story in the USA Today, the author, the writer, Jory Epstein, cites Chiefs fan Katie Camblin. Katie Camblin sent out a tweet about Mahomes and the extension 90 minutes before Schefter. All right? Camblin told USA Today that at 1:21 p.m., her boss at Plaza Liquor in Kansas City, Missouri, informed her that Chiefs employees came into the store looking to purchase 6 bottles of Dom Perignon champagne. Camblin then sent, this is a true story, then sent out a tweet that she ended up deleting. All right, this is the quote. A front office employee for the Chiefs came in and bought 6 bottles of Dom Perignon. Said there's a big signing today. It's all part of the tweet. He said it's not Chris Jones, so it's believed to be Mahomes' deal. End quote. She was ultimately correct, but she deleted the tweet because she was terrified of getting in trouble and angering the Chiefs. She wrote, I didn't want to lose their business. I was afraid they'd be mad, so I deleted it. But of course, screenshots are forever. So she
awesome. Scooped
Adam Schefter.
That is awesome, man.
We got to get her on the show. Samter, get her on the show tomorrow if you can.
Yeah.
I'd love to have her on the show.
Yeah, but it wasn't because she broke anything or she was aware. She's just kind of like observing what's going on in the world.
Yep.
She's obviously a Chiefs fan then.
I'm sure.
So there was
everybody is in Kansas City.
Yeah, true.
It's not like in New York.
It's a great point. It's a great point. No. Or you're just apathetic.
Nobody's apathetic there either.
That's what I mean. There's nobody apathetic in Kansas City. So if you see Chiefs employees, and I'm sure they had gear, or you'd know them because they'd been there before, And there's a big signing, and it's not Chris Jones. There's only one other guy that it could have been.
But that's think about this.
That's awesome, though.
It is awesome. But I think we're glossing over her journalistic instincts, because it's one thing to put out a tweet deducing, well, the Chiefs, you know, upper management came in, or their brass or their hierarchy, and they wanted this, so I'm guessing it's Mahomes' deal. She definitively said it's not Chris Jones' deal. So she had the instincts to inquire.
Yeah. Yeah.
As to who the contract was for, who was the celebration for. So she got some intel, too.
That's smart.
She's, oh, I'd love to have her on the show.
What's it out there? The Kansas City Star? That's what she needs to work for now.
Yeah, she should. The article's in USA Today, but the Kansas City, or I think it's, is the Star still, I know KansasCity.com is.
Yeah, that's most of them now.
They still have to have a print, a hard copy. They have to, in that city. I think they still have the hard copy. But yeah, the fandom blurring and blending into journalism. So Schefter got scooped. And listen, you know, this is the kind of thing where I know, you know, listen, how many times have we already, in the last day and a half, taken what Mahomes has gotten and then tried to parlay it into future forecast for what Dak is going to get? We already talked about, you know, maybe in 2 years, what this means for Kyler Murray, who I've got great expectations for, Mahomes light expectations, but great expectations. You know, the answer is probably it's just one of those unique deals that will not be matched for a long time, because you've got, I mean, you know, Pat, he's first of all, Murray, who I love, is a little on the smallish side. We know that.
Yeah.
So maybe you would avoid doing that based on just the size, but there was nothing that represented any sort of a stop sign for the Chiefs to do this. Some people think it's not a great deal for Patrick Mahomes, which is amazing.
Well, look, at the end of the day, and if the reports of the massive nature of the new television rights deal are true, which could add $100 million, think about that, per team to the cap. So by 2024, 2025, I can't remember when the new money will actually hit the cap. But by 2025, let's say, the salary cap in the National Football League could be close to $300 million. BT went through a list yesterday, or maybe it was last week, actually.
It was yesterday.
Yesterday, the acceleration of the salary cap from $34 million
in
1994 to what it is now, just under $200 million. In about 4 or 5 years, it's going to be $300 million. Pat Mahomes' deal will be a bargain, you know, because it won't be, you know, 15 to 17% of the salary cap. It'll probably be around 13 or 14% of the salary cap, given what he's supposed to make. And so people will look at it and say, just like Jimmy Garoppolo, when the San Francisco 49ers gave him that $100 million deal. Remember, we had John Lynch on, and we're like, man, it's a little early to give, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo a $100 million deal.
Remember,
and
he's like,
no, we looked forward and knew that the next deals were going to be in the $30 million range. So to get him for 26 or whatever it was kind of a bargain. In a sense, that's kind of what the Kansas City Chiefs are doing, thinking about the appreciation of the salary cap. Now, the only thing that really comes from this, at least from how it pertains to other quarterbacks, is will they follow suit? You know, because right now we know, if you look at the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott, we haven't really gotten much information on the Deshaun Watson negotiation, if there even is one, because they still have 2 years, this last season and then his fifth year option before they really have to negotiate it. But with Dak Prescott, we know that he wants to sign a short-term deal, 4 years, and so that when he's 30 years old, he can go back and dip into the pot again. So get a market-setting deal at $36 million or so this year. In 4 years, you get another one, and maybe it's close to $40 million, because the salary cap, as we just mentioned, is going to be high. But when you do it that way, it forces teams' hands on who else they can sign, right? Because it accelerates so much to the cap. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you do a long-term deal like Pat Mahomes did, it puts you in this Tom Brady-like realm. Now, I'm not referring to Tom Brady as the champion. I mean Tom Brady as the star, the league MVP multiple times, Super Bowl MVP, Super Bowl winner, who never made more than $20 million. And as a result, the team always, always had flexibility to sign players in areas of need when they needed to. Mm-hmm. And that's what Patty Mahomes' deal does. Because when you look at the money, like over the next 4 or 5 years, and then you have those guarantee clauses, but over the next 4 years, it's not that punitive. It's not that dissimilar to Jared Goff's deal or Carson Wentz's deal. I mean, maybe by like $5 or $6 million per year, maybe not even, probably like $3 or $4 million per year. And so it's not punitive at all for the Kansas City Chiefs, especially if the cap goes up. So I wonder, like, the precedent has been set with this long-term deal. Mm-hmm. If other quarterbacks will be looking for that big number, you know, potential future security forever, you know, these record-setting deals for athletes, you know, forget football athletes, but just for athletes in exchange for flexibility for your roster, which is so important to winning. You know, I feel for Dallas right now, because if they have to sign Dak Prescott on a short-term deal that, you know, that handicaps them, and on top of Zeke's deal and Amari Cooper's deal and Lawrence's deal, it's going to be impossible for them to financially keep up.
Mm-hmm. Anybody doubt which business model looks savvier, at the more on point, you know, more cerebral, more anticipatory? I mean, it's night and day.
Yeah,
really,
but it takes cooperation, though. It takes.
Like, I got you.
Like, we really are going
That's
to work
true.
Together. It
That's
can't
true.
Be like. And we said this at the top of the show. It can't be, this is my offer, this is my counteroffer, and we're going to meet somewhere in the middle, and it's going to get contentious, and we're not going to agree. It's got to be, let's come up with something unique that's going to benefit everybody. And by signing for a deal that looks like $503 million, or $500 million on paper if he stays there for 10 years, and you have cap flexibility, it's a no-brainer.
I want to throw this at you. I think this is a pretty unique way of looking at the eventual trajectory of Patrick Mahomes. There was an article today. I didn't even read the article. I saw it referenced on social media, and so I don't know which writer. I don't know who wrote it. Otherwise, I would have obviously dug into it deeper. But I just saw it like scrolling real quick, and I couldn't find it again. But somebody basically compared Mahomes to Michael Jordan. And that he's in the early stages of going down as the GOAT. Now, all right, that's obviously, you know, 15, 20 years down the road, or maybe 10 if he, you know, keeps throwing 40-something touchdowns, wins multiple. But it's certainly at least a decade or so off. But you think about the acronym GOAT, and to position somebody as the greatest of all time, the one correlation, I don't know that it's a prerequisite, but I at least my own list, one thing that I do notice pertaining to the various GOATs, like, Wayne Gretzky is the greatest of all time at hockey, and he just burst on the scene, and nobody saw anything like this. I mean, Bobby Orr, other guys could play. Wayne Gretzky was playing a different sport, all right? Tiger Woods stepped out there looking like a small safety or a strong safety or wide receiver, and, hey, as great as Jack is and forever will be, and Arnie and Gary Player and Sam Snead and Varden and all these great golfers, nobody saw that kind of majestic, explosive swing. Same with Michael Jordan. There was a little bit of that in Oscar Robertson in terms of like the fluidity and the body movement. A lot of people kind of look at like Oscar, Dr. J, MJ, and then a few others into Kobe. But MJ was physically unique. So was Jerry Rice. The one guy who was obviously considered the GOAT is Tom Brady, is not something we haven't seen before. He's just an incredible testament of like accruing team success and individual success, all woven into one incredible resume that is beyond challenging. But I look at Mahomes, and while, I know it's putting the cart before the horse here, but if you want to tell me that, you know, whether it's our kids sitting here in 20 years talking about Mahomes, whatever, you know, he's got the recipe. He's got every ingredient to really, I almost hate doing it to the young man, but to make a run at the GOAT. Well, like, he really does.
No, of course he does. And I think you'll find out way before 10 years, BT. If he wins, you know, two more championships before he's 30 years old, you know, or even three more in the next 5 years, then how can you not start to put him in that conversation, especially if he's throwing for, you know, 47 touchdowns to, you know, 12 interceptions or whatever the number may be, and revolutionizing how you have to defend and play against teams like this, then you start to put him in that conversation. The question becomes, how does he evolve his game? Because I think Pat Mahomes, unlike Tom Brady, who, you know, hit statistical ceilings, but it wasn't based on athleticism, right? It was based on execution and being, you know, a step ahead, above the X's and O's type of player. Yep. And that's how he willed his team and made everybody around him better. Pat Mahomes, let's say when he's 34 years old, you know, he's, you know, in the midst of his prime, because that's really when quarterbacks are supposed to be like at the peak of their, coming down from the peak of their prime. How is he going to evolve his game from this, you know, gunslinger who runs around and creates space and does all these things with his athleticism? How does he evolve his game? And if he does that, that's when he'll get into the conversation. But I think his trajectory will start in the next 3 or 4 years, right? They're set up to win a championship right now. Again, you know, they're one of the few that you look at and you say, can they go back to back? The answer is yes, absolutely. They could go back to back, and the way that their contracts are structured, they're not losing anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so there's a good shot for him to start winning championship after championship, which then puts you in that conversation. Because other than Tom Brady, we don't have that, right? We don't have these multiple championships in short periods of time in the National Football League, other than Tom
Montana.
Well, I mean, recent history. I'm talking about now. Yeah. And it's a different game back then with Montana.
No question.
You know, the free agency was different. Guys didn't move around as freely or easily.
Yep.
It's just different right now. And to have a team that's sustainable, it just never felt real unless you had a quarterback who was making less than $20 million, like Tom Brady did for the last 20 years until last season.
And even if he doesn't win... enough championships to satisfy whatever that number is, whether it's two more, whether it's get to three more. I mean, you know, if he ever wins, you know, what Tom has, then it's going to be a no-brainer. But even if he wins half the championships that Tom Brady has, right, you know, there will be no arguing that he is absolutely the best player in football, whereas Tom Brady never was.
Yeah,
maybe because, 1 year.
Well, it's because of how Moss. Well, it's because of how we interpret it, right? And now we don't look at Tom's greatness by his, like, his athleticism, like his athlete. We look at him at his success and how he willed his team and led his team. Whereas Pat Mahomes will be a hybrid of that if he starts winning championship after championship. And not only will you laud how great of a leader and football player is, but you also marvel at his athleticism. Some of the throws that he makes that are just, they don't make sense how he completes them. But it's because he has such a great team around him as well. You can never discount that, especially in the NFL.
All right, let's move on. Coming up next, the NBA bubble. It's approaching. It is approaching. And Evan Turner, he's on the T-Wolves now. We'll get his thoughts about, you know, what to expect. I mean, guys sneaking out, maybe. I mean, guys being guys. Knuckleheads being knuckleheads. And we were all knuckleheads at one point. Until you're not, until you grow up a little bit. I mean, could this actually work here? What does he expect? What has he been told from his team, by the league? Evan Turner going to join us coming up next right here. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here on Tiki and Tierney is 1-855-212-4227. Sponsored by Geico. Do you know that right now Geico's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. We are all getting ready to learn more about this NBA bubble. And, you know, how viable is it really? What's going to happen? I mean, there's just so many restrictions and so many moving parts. It's one big labyrinth, and hopefully it gets over smoothly and everybody's healthy and we eventually crown a champion, but there's a lot of obstacles to overcome, as we know. And we're joined now by a player who's getting ready to head to Orlando. He's on the Timberwolves, second overall pick back in 2010 out of Ohio State. That's Evan Turner. Evan, Tiki, and Tierney, how you doing today?
Hey, what's up? What's going on?
Oh, good, man.
Yeah, we're doing well. How ready are you to get back to basketball? The stoppage has been obviously very disruptive to everybody, but just basketball makes you feel normal, or are you nervous about this?
Oh, no. You know, obviously, I'm just, you know, focused on, you know, getting back to trying to, well, get in positions where, you know, getting back to normality, you know. Right now, you know, I've just been focusing on getting my body right, you know, just staying healthy and, you know, just following, you know, the health restrictions and doing as, you know, it suggests. So that's pretty much it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you talk about, you know, getting your body back into game shape. And, you know, we can speculate sitting here in our office, or I was going to say in our studio, but we're not in our studios. We're in our respective homes right now doing this broadcast. But you guys have also been that way, at home and unconventionally training. And we can say, yeah, they'll bounce right back. But how long do you think it is going to take guys to get into basketball shape, which we all know is different than being in shape?
Yeah, I think obviously it takes more than a few weeks, clearly. I think one thing that is tough to really, kind of calculate in a sense is, going through the grinds of a real basketball game and the grinds of a, you know, season schedule. You know, sometimes, it usually takes a couple months for us to prepare for that during the summertime, then training camp on top of that, you know. So I think that's the biggest thing that our body is going to have to adjust to, and everybody's going to have to be smart about is, not doing too much too soon.
Evan, how much, like, whether it's, you know, emails, whether they mail something to the home, I mean, like, at what level of communication, because it's like we're just playing this guessing game, like the Minnesota organization, have they sent you, or the NBA Players Union, just like a detailed, you know, expectation really from A to Z, encompassing absolutely everything within the bubble? Like, are you guys still guessing to an extent, or do you know exactly what's expected and exactly what is supposed to happen?
I mean, honestly, they've done the best they possibly can to try to update us. I know just even with the COVID situation, every single night we have a member from the medical staff reaching out, asking how we're feeling night and things like that. And, you know, one thing about the NBA is, especially the union, I think Michelle Roberts and all of them, they try their best to put us in situations where our health and, our comfortability and things like that is taken, you know, very seriously and prioritized. I think they comprehend that obviously a bubble isn't ideal for anybody, but, you know, obviously we're all trying to make the best out of it. So, mm-hmm. I never really have any doubt in the sense of being protected by the NBA if they can protect us, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's Evan Turner, and he's been in the league a while now. Second overall pick back in the day, 10 years ago. It's amazing that went pretty fast. And he's with Minnesota. He's a guard. So the to me, like, the energy, the juice that just comes with the NBA playoffs. Listen, don't get me wrong, Evan. We'll take what we can get. But it's one thing as you guys run, you know, big time pickup games before each usual, you know, in a non-pandemic summer, you guys get after it. You know, you really have some high quality run, but nobody's in the gym but the players, maybe a trainer or two, whatever. I mean, imagine playing a playoff game with not a single fan in the building. Like, how weird is that going to be?
It's definitely going to be crazy, but I think one thing that people forget sometimes too, obviously, the fans were definitely great for their support, and they definitely play a big factor. But I think when it comes down to it, you lock in. And sometimes, in the grand scheme of things, I think, like, the great players and the players in the situation are really going to have to set the tone, and they will. I think you put a bunch of competitors on the court together, you know, I think, once somebody sets the tone, like, obviously LeBron is trying to play, you know, a lot of top guys are trying to play and trying to get a ring, and they're taking it seriously. So I think everybody's going to follow suit, you know, mm-hmm. and there will be some good basketball.
Yeah. How odd is it going to be being in the second bubble? Obviously the Orlando bubble is the one everybody talks about, but the one in Chicago, which is also being referred to, you know, what's that one going to be like? Cause BT and I struggled to think, to find, like, motivation. Like, what's the motivation going to be?
It's your job, to be honest. It's your job. This is what you do. You know what I mean? I think when it comes down to it, it's your job. Obviously, with each situation, it's just, you know, you have an opportunity to get better. And obviously, when you step on the court, you're always being evaluated, you know? So when you know the ins and outs of that, you know, you can't really – not everybody's out here coming out here. Not everybody's out here having the luxury to come out and kind of – take it easy how they want. You know, it's still a business, and, you know, you still learn a lot about people through this situation. So, you know, whether you think it's, you know, it's a turn off or not, you're still going to be evaluated.
You know what I wanted to ask you, and I don't know if this would apply to the second bubble here, but I'm sure you have some thoughts on this. You know, Mike Scott spoke about this. Jaylen Brown for the Celtics spoke about this, and Teague and I were hitting this last hour with the I guess it's roughly 20 or so previously approved messages, social justice reform, etc. Everybody knows what's going on, and you know, to us, it was a good gesture. And, you know, maybe there's a dialogue where there could be other ones added. But, like, are you in line with Mike and what Jaylen said? Because to me, again, the gesture seemed noble and seemed very aware of the situation. But it doesn't seem like all the players are thrilled with the actual messaging. How did that, like, exchange? How does that even work? Like, do you guys have any input on that or no?
I mean, I'm never sure upset because they basically gave us a message, right? And I guess, like, a list to choose from, basically. And honestly, I didn't dig too deep into it because I just comprehended the basis of everything. Obviously, I think it's tough because when you feel like you get a list or whatever, you feel as though they're trying to trap your voice and kind of trying to censor your voice. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, you know, something that seems like it's always followed the usual cycle, censor our voice, trap our voice, and do things like that. And then on the other end, I mean, to play devil's advocate, no pun intended in any sense, it's like legitimate, we're about to be on TV, there are certain rules and certain things that can't be, you know, applied. I mean, honestly, comprehend as individuals and everything, we can take it personal, but the NBA and everything is also still a business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And whether we want to or not, and I agree with them saying, like, how they're feeling, like, trapping their voice, whatever. It's like, it's legit. This life is 80-20, and not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not everything is going to be perfect, but when it comes down to it, I think, you know, whatever is on the list, I think the most important thing is to reiterate it. And, you know, like Martin Luther King said, you know, hate can't drown out hate, only love can do that. So I think the more, no matter what, how we speak or whatever we do, I think, you know, the emphasis on positivity and getting the right type of message out is going to be the most important thing in any part of this. So,
yeah, no, I think that's well said. You know, Evan, the basketball tournament is going on right now. You guys haven't been able to play your game, but you have been coaching this game, and you're the defending champion here, Carmen's Crew. Tell us a little bit about this tournament, because the prize is real. You win this thing, it's $1 million. Tell us about this and how it's going on despite what's going on in the country.
It's been cool. You know, right now, we've been participating. Some of my college buddies and I have been partaking in this tournament, for like the past 4 years. So It's basically been like an alumni tournament kind of, in a sense.
Yeah.
I've just been coaching myself, Jared Fellinger. We've been coaching, you know, John Dealer, David Lighty, Aaron Kraft, you know, Dallas Lauderdale, Sean Thomas, a lot of, you know, former All-Americans. So, it's been fun. It's been competitive. And, you know, we've been locked in and try to come back and repeat. We had a great time in Chicago last year winning. And we think we are, you know, set up right now to do it again. So it's going to be fun. I think the TDT has been a lot of excitement. And I think it'll be a great way to kind of, you know, get the energy and excitement for when the NBA comes back to play and everything else. So
I've watched it, by the way. I had it on a little bit today when I was in my office. A couple guys I know from St. John's who have played there over the years that have actually made some money. They've been rolling in this thing for a while. But I'm curious, how many of these players do you think? I know some guys have gotten looks, whether it's camp and, you know, whether it's a two-way contract back in the day. Some guys played for a minute, then they bounced overseas. But how many, like, give me a percentage of, because I know it's high level. Give me a percentage of guys that are playing in the TBT that you think could actually, if they were in the right situation, stick in the NBA for a couple of years?
I mean, it's starting on my team alone. David Lighty, he just won 6'5", 220. He just won French Player of the Decade. He just won four French championships. I think he's gotten some looks and some camp invites. I think in the right situation, he can make a career. John Diebler, the all-time leader in three-point in Big Ten history, like the best you've ever seen. 6'7", he's a flamethrower. He's made a few million overseas. I think he can make it. Will Buford, the second all-time scorer in the Ohio State history. And last year, MVP, he's official. Ian Kraft, clearly, he's a dog.
Oh, he's a beast. I love that kid.
Yeah. Yeah, Deshaun Thomas, former second-team All-American. He's played for Panathinaikos out there. He's made millions. So, I mean, I got seven or eight animals over here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not just for my team. I know you guys, you play sports, and sometimes you're sensitive to simple timing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, situations, everything, you know, it's a business. You know, one thing you learn sometimes, you know, you show empathy towards those that played overseas. It's like, it's a business. Sometimes it's legitimate. It's just a business. It might not even be your skill set. It might just be if the numbers add up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I got you.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, go ahead. I was going to say, before we let you go, there's one question I got to ask you, because I saw this story. And our producer, Sampson, just reminded me of this, that one of the teams, the Eberlin Drive, they had to drop out because of too many positive tests. And I hope this isn't a foreshadowing of what could potentially happen to the NBA in either of the bubbles, the restarts. But how has the testing been? And, you know, what's been the conversation around that? Because it's obviously the big impediment to basketball, really any sport going forward.
Yeah, I think the testing, it's been every single morning, so we're doing a survivor test. So before we play our first game, we'll probably have a total of six tests. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's been every single day, and we get it back. And we've done a saliva test, and then today we did the one through the nose. So
Oof. It's
been relatively, I mean, everybody from our team, we've been checking for the past 2 months to make sure we all been, you know, COVID, you know, clean of COVID. So it's been one of those things, but it's been relatively easy. We kind of follow the rules. I think a lot of people in a certain amount have, and I don't know. I understand what it is, and you know, as long as you stay inside and comprehend, you know, what's risking if you don't follow the rules, and you know, you should be straight. I mean, yeah. I like getting paid. So.
Yeah, I'll stay inside for a couple of weeks if I get paid, right?
I'll stay inside. And wait for it, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think when it comes down to it, it's just putting in perspective and really just being a pro about it.
There you go. All right, man. Well, listen, good catching up. Good having you on the show. Good luck with everything. And
no doubt, man. Appreciate y'all. Y'all be cool, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for hopping on, Evan.
You too, man. There he is, Evan Turner, second overall pick. Boy, it didn't seem like it was that long ago when there was a fervent debate because. You know, and he was a great college player. And I remember that John Wall went first in that draft. But I remember that was DeMarcus Cousins' draft. I remember the word around Evan Turner, what position is he going to play at the next level? And he never fully found the position. He's played 10 years. He's banked a ton of money. He's got an accomplished resume. But I remember that 10 years ago, and it kind of came to fruition. I don't think he was drafted by the right team either. I wasn't a great situation in Philly early then. But, you know, it's not just quarterbacks that get drafted by the wrong team, Teak, you know?
Yeah, I know.
It happens NBA too.
It's true.
Axe update, blast after that. Here's the Axe Man coming at you right now. To the Teak and Tierney, brought to you by Napa. Whether you stop by a locally owned Napa Auto Parts, Napa Auto Care, or visit Napa online, if you need help with your ride, you can count on Napa Know How. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. I was just reading a piece on how Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, really repaired their damaged relationship. It's pretty interesting. Just saw this on the Big Lead during the break. I was reading that. Maybe if we have time, I can get into it a little bit. But time for the blast, Tiki. You ready to go?
Let's hit it.
Okay, hit it.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Teaky and Tierney.
All right, so the Broncos will add Mike Shanahan to their Ring of Honor in 2021. Who was more crucial to getting Elway his title, Shanahan or TD?
Oh, it's such an unfair question.
Salute.
It's such an unfair question. It's obviously the coach. The coach always gets the credit, even though TD is his 2,000-yard seasons and that, you know, zone blocking scheme, which is now illegal because they were clipping the back of, you know, defensive linemen. But I'll say it was the coach. I love TD, but I'm going to say it's the coach.
Oof, I'm going to have to respectfully disagree on this one. You know, trust me, I saw him light up my team many a times. Terrell Davis was so dynamic. He was, if he was, put it this way, if he was any less dynamic, Elway was too old to win. He wasn't like I'm trying to think of an athlete who just shouldn't be on the court or the field anymore. He wasn't that diminished, but he was a shell of his former great self. And I thought TD really helped hide some of those deficiencies and bridge the gap. I hear you on being the leader, and that's the coach.
Mm-hmm.
But Terrell Davis was so great those couple of years. I'm going to actually say it's TD.
I mean, I'm just saying, 12-4, he threw 27 touchdowns. And then,
because of TD.
And then 10-2, and they, I mean, I don't know, man.
Guy ran for 2,008 yards and 21 touchdowns, yeah, 5.5 true. Yards a pop. It's pretty that's easy true. To throw some touchdowns when he got hold, when he got
talking,
space.
I'm talking about the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know. We beat them that 1 year, by the way.
That's right, you did. Let them know. Speaking. All right, last week, the nation's top quarterback recruit, his name is Caleb Williams, committed to Oklahoma. Is the quarterback success in Norman more about the talent of the quarterbacks or Lincoln Riley's system? I believe that's another one where it's kind of a little bit of both here, obviously. But, you know, listen, I mean, Kyler Murray, I'm all in. And I'm all in at the NFL level. Lincoln Riley's not coaching him right now.
Yeah.
I think that Baker Mayfield is going to be a very good player. He was very good his first year, 27 touchdowns. So I'm going to say it's obviously a combination of both, but there's a requisite amount of talent from the player that needs to be there to have the system transfer as effectively as it has so far. I'll leave it that way.
I mean, Samter got lazy with these binary questions.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, come on now. Look, I think it's a... It's a nuanced question, a nuanced answer, because in a different system, Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, who were atypical quarterbacks because of their size. Now, Baker's supposedly over 6 feet tall, but I don't know if I believe that. But there's a confidence that's instilled because of the system. More importantly, Lincoln Riley's system allows you to figure out how to be successful, you know, despite not being 6'4" and, you know, the prototypical thrower, passer, right? And so I think that learned skill translates in the National Football League. Russell Wilson was the exact example as well when he went to Wisconsin, right? The system allowed him to evolve his game to a point where he could succeed on the next level. So it's partly the system, but it's also partly how that team operates. So it's a little bit of both.
Okay. All right, Teak. Major League Baseball schedule was released last night. What grabbed us? What gripped us? What stood out the most?
What gripped you? You're the baseball fan. I didn't even look at it, to be honest with you.
Okay, I appreciate the candor. I appreciate the honesty. I will tell you what gripped me. It was not gripping enough, because if you remember, 3 weeks ago, I told everybody, just give me, you know, 12:07, 1:07, 2:07, 3:07 first pitch, and just roll them in and get some young kids reacquainted with the game, or older people reacquainted, young kids, maybe introduce them and take advantage of, you know, day camps not being open, or a lot of them, and a very unique, you know, miserable summer schedule for kids, basically. And instead, what do we get on opening day? We get a 7:08 Eastern first pitch and a 10:08 Eastern first pitch.
Oh, great.
I mean,
lovely.
It's absolutely amazing. And even the next day, the first full day, because the Yankees and the Nationals, obviously, you get Scherzer and Cole, and I'm pumped up about that. You get Giants and Dodgers, and I told you that was going to happen yesterday. That was a leak, so that's cool. Historic rival. But the next day, everybody plays, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's one game at 4:10. Mets play the Braves, so you get DeGrom, which will be sweet. But then it's business as usual. 6:10, 6:40, 7:05, 7:10, 7:10, 7:30, 8:05, 8:10, 8:15. They did the exact opposite of what I said they should do, which was so obvious.
And the exact opposite of what basketball is doing.
Correct.
Put a game on starting at 1 o'clock because people are at home. You know what? Even if they're working, people are sitting at home because they can't go anywhere right now. You take advantage of that and get the eyes, but they didn't. You know, quick question, BT.
Yes.
This may disrupt this, but I got to ask it.
It's all right.
You know, we were just talking earlier about the regional schedule. So it's the AFC East. You play
you mean
regional,
the AL East.
I mean, whatever. I mean, yeah, the AL East, and then they play the NL East.
Correct.
Do you think that comes permanent in some way?
No, because I think there's the balance of power is so it lacks anything that's remotely equitable from a competitive point of view. The Now, the Mets are going to be good. The Nationals are the champions. The Braves, I know the Freeman's down and Markakis isn't playing. I get that, but the Braves are really good. I mean, the Marlins aren't going to be as bad as they've been. I'm leaving out a team. I'm leaving out a good team. I don't know why. I don't have it in front. I'm leaving
who?
Out a good
who?
Team. The American, Phillies.
Yeah.
They got bats everywhere, and then you got the Yankees and the Toronto and the Rays as two teams that should be playoff teams. Toronto's coming up the board, and eventually Boston gets their act together. The point being, it's not fair for certain teams. Now I know that that'll be cyclical.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's
I'm just
you
looking.
You got to have it rotated.
Yeah, I mean, Baltimore and Miami, they were horrible last year.
Miami's coming around. Miami's system, they're not going to be bad in 2 years. I'm
yeah,
telling you.
Well, I agree. And so Detroit was bad, but I mean, that's historically not the case. Mm. So I mean, I don't know. I think there's some appeal when Tom Glavine was talking about it. It just feels like really appealing to have that kind of regional rivalry start to develop over time.
Listen,
anyway, just a thought.
No, I think it's fine. I would actually be, I've said this before, you want to come up with a division, you want to give me, just like the American League East, you want to give me Yankees, let's go complete reconfiguration.
Yeah.
Yankees, Mets, Boston Red Sox, we'll go Phillies, and we'll go...
Washington.
Yeah, Orioles. I think you got a
Baltimore.
Either one works, actually. It doesn't really matter. And then you have, like, there's just so many ways to do this. Go, like, Tampa Rays, the Marlins.
When they add two teams and you can go four division or four teams per division, that's when you'll do that. When it's 32 teams, it's more like the National Football League as opposed to 30 like it is right now. So you have to have three divisions.
Yes, for sure. And I'm okay, by the way, with any overhaul of the schedule. I'm fine with it. You know, I don't need to see the Yankees play the Orioles or even the Red Sox 19 times a year. You don't need that. That's just a lot against the same team. So you want to mix and match, I'm cool with it. Have a little fun. Experiment. This is the time to do it.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
Yeah, that TD question was a good one. Mm-hmm. I mean, like... So Dan Reeves is coaching that team. They don't win?
Yeah, they probably do.
I mean, he was so good, Terrell Davis. Come on.
Yeah.
Guy had 36 touchdowns in 2 years. That's just rushing.
Yeah, it's true.
36.
It's unreal.
And 36 salutes. I love that salute.
He was the man.
He was great. He really was. And then he got hurt. That was it.
That was it. Quick. Seven seasons, I think. I think it was only 7 years, and only six of them he really played because he was hurt in one of them.
Seven, yep. Teak, have a good Tuesday. See you tomorrow, buddy.
You too, brother.
No doubt. We'll see you Wednesday on Teaky and Tierney. Have a great Tuesday evening. Remain safe, sensible, and try to remain sane. We'll catch you then. Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.